Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Now, welcome along to the football show. So, we're going to bring you up today with all the live football going on at the moment. Liverpool are 1-0 up this evening. They're away to MK Dons after 64 minutes. James Milner with the goal for them. Keeper didn't do very well, but nonetheless, they are 1-0 up. Second half's just started at Old Trafford. It's nil-all between Manchester United and Rochdale. Wolves are 1-0 up on Reading. Chelsea have scored another goal. They're 4-1 up at home to Grimsby Town. Conor Harrigan has scored for Aston Villa. They are 2-1 up away to Brighton. Elsewhere, Bournemouth trailing 1-0 to Burton. And Oxford 1, West Ham 0 is the latest there after 59 minutes. Later on this hour, Philippe Auclair will join us. He's going to talk to us about the travails of Neymar, who has not been forgiven by PSG fans. He's been roundly booed at every touch. He's had objects thrown on the pitch at him. Mind you, he's scoring and scoring brilliant goals as well and scoring last-minute winners for them domestically, but it's not currying much favour with the locals in Paris. So that is on the way. But first, Martin Lipton joins us. He is the chief sports reporter with The Sun. You're there, Martin?
I'm indeed.
Thanks for joining us. So I want to talk to you about Spurs and how serious this situation is. They lost to Colchester last night. Here's Mauricio Pochettino firstly speaking afterwards and referencing how the squad is not settled. Have a listen.
Well, I knew that it's going to arrive a tough situation because when you have a non-settled squad always is difficult, and then you lose time, and you need time to recover the time that you lose, and that is in the period that we are. Maybe our performance are good, but you need this extra year that you need, that is mental, is connection, is energy, is to be all together, is not to have different agenda in the squad, and that is why we need time again to build that togetherness that you need when you are competing in this type of level, of course.
So Martin, I mean, he says it in pretty calm terms, but when he's talking about different agendas in the dressing room, that sounds serious enough. And given their position in the league, 7th, 8 points from 6 games, something not quite right there.
Yeah. Look, the reality is he knew, felt at the end of last season, after the Champions League final, that it was the end for that team. He wanted to get rid of and change half of the outfield team that started in Madrid. And he only got rid of one of them for a variety of reasons, but the main one being that nobody wanted the players he wanted to get rid of. Or if they did, they weren't prepared to make a bid. So he's ended up with Alderweireld and Vertonghen and Eriksen and Rose, all very good players, but all of whom he was ready to let go and start again. And he didn't do it. And they know he was ready to let them go. And they know that they're not going to be here next season, come what may, because they're out of contract and won't be signing new ones. And it ends up with a bit of a messy start to the season. Of course, at some point, those players who aren't playing well either have to start playing well to get in the team and therefore get the moves they want for the money they want, or suffer the consequences. And we're getting close to that. At the moment, there's a lack of options, because Ndombele's not been fit, Lo Celso and Sessegnon aren't fit, others are out of form, Dele Alli being a prime example of that. Even Harry Kane, despite the goals he's scoring, isn't playing as well as he can do. He's scoring goals because he's a really good player, rather than just because he's playing well. And there's a confluence of things which has meant them having a pretty miserable start to the season.
So you mentioned a few names there. So Eriksen's in the last year of his contract. You mentioned Vertonghen, Rose and Alderweireld. Does he want to keep any of them, do you suspect? Eriksen, I presume he wants to keep.
No, I mean, he'd let them go. He would have let them go. Lo Celso was bought ostensibly to be the long-term Eriksen replacement. And if he could have maybe got in Bruno Fernandes as well, who was an option, then he would have, they'd have been easier to let Eriksen go. The problem was that they didn't get the players in early enough. But the thing with Pochettino, as we know, is that unless he feels you're part of the unit and are on side, he tends to cut you loose. I mean, you remember Alderweireld 2 seasons ago couldn't get in the team because he didn't sign a new contract and he wouldn't play it. He let Kyle Walker go because he felt that Walker was no longer as committed to the club as he was. He's done it with Trippier now. I think he feels that he's had enough of Rose being a bit of a problem in the dressing room, He initially liked the fact that Rose used to rough everybody up the wrong way and rub them up the wrong way and get them going. And then he thought, hang on, this is becoming destabilizing and destructive rather than positive. And felt he could let him go as well. So there's a few of these that he would like to pass aside. I think Wanyama's another one. I mean, that's the truth. If he was ready to let Alderweireld-Rose and it was Dembélé go two summers ago, not last summer, the summer before, and they didn't go. So he's had two summers on the spin of trying to get rid of a couple of players at the club.
When you paint it like that, I'm actually surprised he decided to stay on.
I think he thought they were going to go. I think Levy thought they were going to go. They didn't keep them because they didn't want to keep, because they wanted to keep them against his will. They kept them because nobody came in with a bid. You know, in the end of the funnel down the window, Levy's trying to flog Rose to Watford just to get him out of the club, and he wouldn't go.
Mm.
I mean, it's a situation which is not a Pochettino doing, albeit that he has some complicity, unquestionably. What is clear is, I think that if he's going to stay on beyond this season, and I think at the moment there's no suggestion that he wants out, he's got to get the guarantee, the promise and the delivery of the chance for Poch 2.0 next season. He feels his team has done all it can, and he wants to build. If he's going to stay, it needs to be another project. The one thing that benefits Spurs is, no matter how awful they've been at the start of the season, and they have, so is everybody else. They're battling for the fourth spot. Because, you know, City and Liverpool are way and far over the hills and never to be seen again. But they're not in the same league as Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, United, et al., who are much of a muchness. The one thing, and the thing that's in Tottenham's favour, is if you actually look at the players, they've probably got man-for-man better players. And as long as they're not horrendous, just merely ordinary over the next month or two and then find their feet, they're still going to have a good chance of getting in the top four. But if they don't find their feet, they won't do. And, you know, there's a chance for Leicester, potentially West Ham, maybe. I don't think Everton, because they're a bit of a shambles as well. To definitely make into the top six, if not the top four, because just look at them. The other four, the four of the big six teams expect to be there, are simply not very good. You know, Chelsea haven't won a home match yet in the league. This is the first home match they won at all tonight. They are going to win that. United are extremely vulnerable. Arsenal can't defend for Toffee and got a win against Villa, which they didn't deserve in a variety of circumstances on Sunday. I mean, all four of them are pretty hopeless, if we're being honest.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I hadn't quite realised that was the dynamic that he was referencing when he talked about different agendas. I came into this season thinking that Spurs would fulfil the preordained role. It would be Liverpool, Man City, and they would stick with them till about April and then give it a rattle in Europe. Do you still think they can give it a rattle in Europe? Like, are things kind of miserable behind the scenes, or is it just a kind of standard enough situation that does arise at clubs?
Look, if you look at Spurs, there's always been glitches in seasons under Pochettino, but they tended to bond together and come out. And it may just be one game that gets them out. You know, they're playing Bayern Munich next Tuesday. If it all comes together and they play well and win, then all of the problems may sort of seem to magically disappear, particularly if they get a victory at the weekend over Southampton. Then it's two on the spin, go to Brighton, potentially win there. Where's the crisis gone? You know, there was supposed to be a crisis last year when they lost two on the spin to Watford and Liverpool, and then they went on a great run, and that was despite the European form, which was pretty ropey at the start, as we saw, and they ended up squeezing through and going all the way to the final. No, I don't think they'll do that, to be honest. But they have got a pretty soft group, and they should, if they find any sort of form, qualify. I mean, they're better than Red Star and Olympiacos, and they've already got a draw at Olympiacos, which actually favours Spurs in terms of qualification, even if not for the finishing top. And they have the benefit of goals in them, because Kane scores goals and wins penalties, but scores goals and scores penalties. Son scores goals, Moura can score goals. They're not, you know, they've got the ability to hurt teams just because of good players, and that is in their favour. Some quality players. They're just not playing collectively very well. They're making the same mistake again and again and again defensively. And yeah, Vertonghen, there was a big furore about Vertonghen being left out of the team at the start of the season. You can now see why he was left out of the team, because he hasn't played well. Alderweireld has been the best of the defenders, and he hasn't played as well as he can. And they had I mean, it's interesting that Foyt was on the bench for the first time this season yesterday. He was he's the chosen starting right back who hasn't had a kick yet. That may make a bit of difference because it'll give him more solidity, I think. I actually think Rose has been all right, but he's not been as good as he was 2 or 3 years ago. And we haven't seen Ndombele properly yet. Winks has been the only consistent performer in midfield. It's been, you know, they are a collective underperformance. Mm. And do that, and you get a bit of bad luck as well. You know, the situation on Saturday against Leicester. Even if Son's offside, and that's a big call to make, he was tackled by the Leicester player. Therefore, the goal came in the second phase. Under VAR protocol, the goal stands. They can't go back, but they did.
There is a £600-700 million debt on the stadium. If Pochettino is committed to rebuilding Spurs 2.0 under his watch, will he be given much money? And it's hard not to think of Zidane almost constantly on the brink over in Madrid. And Pochettino was asked about Madrid at the FIFA Awards during the week, and he said one year, he'd like to manage Madrid. I mean, when the offer comes around, he might look at things and look at the money that is potentially available or not available to him and say, sod this, look, this thing has just run its course. So what money will he have to spend, courtesy of Daniel Levy?
Well, the refinance that they announced last week is £637 million at 2.66%. That's £17 million a year. Tottenham revenues last season were £390 million. I don't think it's an issue, actually. Yeah. I thought it might have been, but it's much less of an issue. What they won't do is go out and spend £200 million net, because you're not allowed to anymore anyhow. Mm. Under UEFA FFP rules, the maximum you're supposed to spend in any 1 year is £90 million net. Now, admittedly, that's amortised, etc. But so they don't have, you know, they're not going to spend the sort of money that City and Chelsea have in the past. But they will still spend money because they make more. They made a profit of £113 million last year. They have the money. They have some money to spend, and if they don't, you know, they may not be able to compete with everyone in the world. But they're in the top 10 richest clubs in world football. Mm. They can spend money, and maybe at some point, Daniel Levy sells, and Joe Lewis sells. If a bid comes in at £2.5 million, and the new owners are going to spend money as well. So I don't think it's not crisis in that regard.
No.
There may be a point for Pochettino where he decides, you know what, this is as far as it goes here. Well, and if it were next summer, that's 6 years. He's not cutting and running, is he, after 6 years? He's given it a good crack. So at the moment, I don't think there's any desire to leave. But he also has to think that it's right to stay. And he seemed, when I briefly spoke to him on Monday night in Milan, he seemed quite cheerful, big smile on his face. He was quite happy. And then they do that last night and it all goes again. they were But it was certainly a mix and match team with two kids playing at the back and up front with Walker Peters, and some of them just not, you know, Dyer's first game that I can remember. So long since he last played. There's a bit of that finding fit as well for certain players. But let's be honest, no one can pretend it's a healthy, happy ship at the moment. It's not, because they're not playing well now.
Yeah, okay. Very interesting. Just one last quick one. I know you didn't see last night's game in full, so I didn't want to put you too much on the spot. We were obviously keeping an eye out for Troy Parrott, who made his debut. What have you heard about this guy, Martin? Is he going to, does he have a great chance of making a career at Spurs?
They're very keen on him. Obviously, he's been there. He's scored a lot of goals in the youth team levels. He's now in the first team squad. I think it's a frustration for him that they've gone out, because he'd have started the next round as well if they were in, and he may now have to wait until the FA Cup for his next first team start. But he will be able to play for the UEFA Youth League, which is pretty good as a standard. And he'll be on the bench occasionally and maybe get 15, 20 minutes, particularly when the game starts coming thicker and faster, going into another time when there's lots of matches. The view with the club, and one of the reasons they let Llorente go is because they want to give Parrott game time to be the number two to Kane, and maybe even eventually his successor if he decides to go in 3 or 4 years. And there's certainly belief that he can be a very important player for the club.
Okay.
but they're not going to press him too fast and try and turn him into something that he's not before his time, because that would be damaging and detrimental to Troy Parrott. Let him learn. Let him play. Let him train with the first team and get his chances as and when they come.
Okay.
But he's still a young boy. It's stupid. I expect it too quick, you know, too fast. Let it come naturally.
Absolutely. Listen, thanks for all that, Martin. Appreciate it.
No worries. Take care.
Martin Lipton there, chief sports reporter with the Sun. Sorry for the quality of line. I know it wasn't outstanding. We persevered to the end. So the latest now is that Liverpool have scored a second goal away to MK Dons. Hoover with the goal on 69 minutes. So Milner with the first. Liverpool comfortable there. Chelsea at home, 4-1 up on Grimsby. Conor Harrigan scored for Aston Villa this evening. They're 3-1 up away to Brighton. We have Manchester United, 60 minutes gone, still nil all. At home to Rochdale. Wolves 1-0 up on Reading. Sunderland 1-0 up away to Sheffield United. And West Ham United, after their win against United at the weekend, Man United at the weekend, are 2-0 down away to Oxford after 74 minutes. As mentioned, Neymar not having a good time of it in PSG. They're not too happy with him. We will have Philippe Auclair on a crystal clear line for you next.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Now then, you're welcome back. So as mentioned before the ad break, we're turning to Paris now to talk about Neymar. He's been on the end of some abuse from the PSG fans. They haven't quite forgiven him yet for his more than flirtations with Barcelona, some booing, some objects thrown apparently by home fans in the second half of a recent game. Neymar, for his part, is scoring big goals. He's scored late winners in their last two league games. There's a brilliant goal against Lyon in particular in recent times, which is worth digging out. We have Philippe Auclair on the line for more. Evening, Philippe.
Good evening to you.
Thanks for joining us. So they weren't best pleased that Neymar made it so damn clear he wanted to get the hell out of Paris.
That's the euphemism of the season, I think. Yes, they were not too pleased. Well, certainly a large part of the people who go to the Parc des Princes of PSG fans were not pleased at all. And in fact, what's happened since he came back has been, well, not exactly edifying, but shows that there's an awful lot of work to be done before he's brought back into the fold as far as the fans are concerned. And I would even go as far as saying that some of these fans, we know there's a very strong nucleus of ultras at PSG, have basically made it almost like a sign of their ultratude to make sure that he doesn't feel welcome. So, as he said himself, he's going to feel like I'm playing away from home a lot of the time.
When we talk about booing, I haven't seen the games in full. Is he being booed every time he touches the ball? Is it when his name is being read out? Is it the whole stadium? Is it just the ultras? What are we talking about here?
We're talking about booing. We're talking about very, very loud booing. But, you know, I mean, he's played very few games since he missed the first four games of the league season for fitness issues, so they say. Came back a bit surprisingly against Strasbourg, which was at the Parc des Princes, because actually many of us thought that PSG would choose to make him play his first game away from home so that to soften the blow, so to speak. Mm. And he was booed roundly every time he touched the ball when his name was said. There were banners everywhere. And then, of course, what does he do? He did what Neymar does. He scored the winner at the very end of the game, and a spectacular winner as well. I mean, you've all seen it, yeah. I'm sure. And with this wonderful, I don't know what you call it, scissor kick off the post. And then 3 points for Paris Saint-Germain, but it still was booed. And then he's played one more game, but that was at Lyon,
yeah.
Where he had the reception was very, very hostile, both from the away fans, even though they celebrated his winning goal again late in the game, and an absolutely magnificent goal. But also the Lyon supporters pelted him with various projectiles when he was taking corner kicks. I mean, you're talking... they said it was just sheets of paper, you know, and little paper balls. But, you know, I saw some lighters. I saw some bottles as well thrown at him. And lo and behold, absolutely no action was taken. People seem to think it's perfectly all right in France.
Well, okay. I didn't realize it was quite that serious. So
it was bad. Yeah. It was bad. And it was, and also, it was particularly bad because as one of the way it was filmed, you could really see what was going on. So I suppose we were more aware of it, but perhaps we would have been with a wider angle. But the camera focused on Neymar, we could see things raining on him, and the hostility, the faces distorted with anger and hatred. There's no other word for it. And the stewards doing absolutely nothing. People are again thinking it's absolutely normal. So he's not exactly, he's having a grand time on the pitch. He's been superb. But he's not, I'm sure he's not really enjoying, his current football life in France, which was actually one of the reasons, and he's back in France full stop, which was one of the reasons, if not the main reason, why he wanted to go to start with.
Yeah. Philippe, was Neymar a very popular figure with the PSG fans up until the summertime? Like, his histrionics are divisive and many people find them quite unappealing. Had he had a very good relationship with the PSG fans up until the summer, or were there reservations about him?
There were some reservations in some corners, but on the other hand, and especially because, you know, he hadn't necessarily pulled his weight all through the season, the fact that you couldn't rely on him all of the time, he was injured so often, he's... off the pitch lifestyle, you know, the famous party that he went to, his birthday party, the way that he used to spend a lot of time in Brazil, come late for training, pre-season training, and so on. There were many people who were a little bit, to be honest, were not too happy about that. But on the other hand, every time he was on the pitch, he delivered. And there's one thing you cannot say against Neymar. People could stop at the histrionics and the hype, and the merchandising, you know, puppet, whatever you want to call him. But on the pitch for PSG, he was genuinely one of those players who never accepted to be beaten, even when PSG went through some pretty rocky times last season in particular. And of course, he missed a lot of games, but he always pulled his weight in the games that he was in. So the attitude, I would say, towards him was split, but he was the bad guy, but he was our bad guy. Yeah. This time, because of the very public nature of his flirting with Barcelona and all the stories which have been coming in, and especially what he said himself about basically, you know, I want to go, and I'm not going to achieve anything in Paris, and I've had enough of the city and all these sort of things. Yes, that has turned now the public dead against him, which is a shame. He is a Ligue 1 superstar. And since he's come back, he's actually shown us what we were missing.
Very interesting. Like, we can always dehumanize people who have such celebrity. Yeah. Neymar, for his part, has been asked about this, as you might imagine. He said, "It's not the first time I've been booed by everyone. It's sad, but I know that from now on, every game I play will be an away game." So it looks like he's showing a bit of resolve and has resolved himself to this situation. It could have gone one or two ways. I mean, he could have very easily said, "I'm not playing in this environment, I'm downing tools."
No, that's not the style of the player at all. I think many people misunderstand that, is that this player, despite the way he plays and the way he behaves on the pitch and off the pitch, is somebody who is a genuine winner and somebody who's always been like that. And I had the chance, actually, I was just, not that long ago, I was in Edinburgh for a sports conference where I listened to his father, Neymar Senior, and also his and I had a long chat with his lawyer, Marcos Motta, and talking about him and who he was and what exactly had gone through his head during this crazy summer. And the thing is that you've got somebody who is fundamentally wants to have a great time as a footballer. He enjoys it. He wants the joy of it, and he was not getting that in Paris anymore. He was also missing his friends. He's left a lot of friends back in Catalonia. And that's why you shouldn't look further than that. It was not some kind of extraordinary plot to make as much money as possible from PSG or Barcelona, even though, obviously, if the operation had been concluded, it would have been quite a good one for the Neymar family. But that was not the prime consideration in what he said. And he's not a happy player, but on the other hand, as I said, and we'll repeat, he's a winner, and which is why he hasn't hidden on the pitch when he's been with Paris, despite the boos, despite everything. When he's been there this season, only two games, only 180 minutes. We'll see him, this evening as well. I should think so, against Stade de Reims. But he's been absolutely... how can I put it? He wants to give everything genuinely when he's on the field of play, and I don't think he's one of those players who's going to go in a sulk and decide. I mean, he might do in other areas, but once he is on the pitch with that shirt on and the ball at his feet, he's a different man. And this is probably the only way he can be brought back into the fold and convince the Paris supporters that he's with them 100%. But it's also, if you look beyond, because, I mean, nobody has many doubts about the fact that he's not going to be a PSG player forever, and that it's a saga that was going to run on and on and on, it's also the best advertisement he could do for his own talent and mentality and professionalism as a player.
Philippe, at that conference, did his father or his lawyer give any indication as to why he actually moved to PSG? Because from the outset, it just looked like the wrong kind of move for him.
I'm pretty sure that the move was financially driven. I don't have any other explanation for it. You've got to remember that you're not talking about a player, but you're talking about what they call the Neymar project. And a quite extraordinary thing, actually, I don't think many people know that. The reason why he stayed in Brazil at Santos for so long, when people were expecting him to go to Europe as soon as it was clear he was a genius with the ball, and that was very, very early on in his career, he decided to stay only to build his brand domestically and then internationally. And it's all part of a great marketing scheme, and the way he's moved clubs so far has been driven by this project. And they're very open about that, as in we want to maximize the value of the Neymar brand. And by going to PSG and being the main man in a team that has got prodigious resources, was, in their view, a way to broaden that appeal and, to also work with a number of other sponsors and so forth. And it was very much a commercial choice, not, I think, a personal choice. Why would you leave Barcelona, especially when we've seen what Messi has been doing since then. There were some problems in that club, but nothing to justify him, closing the door in such a spectacular way. But it had to do with the money that Barcelona wanted to take, the money that PSG was willing to give, and the money that he would be able to make in his career, as well as joining a team which had and has genuine expectations of becoming a very important team in Europe and elsewhere. So it sort of makes sense, and I'm sure that, of course, if you look at the previous, two seasons, you think, well, what has he done? He's won titles that anybody could have won because he's in such a big team. They failed in the Champions League and failed so spectacularly in that competition, which is why, I mean, in case people don't remember it, but the quote that really drove people against Neymar was the reference to Barcelona, and when Barcelona was the team that took out PSG in that famous remontada, and that people just cannot swallow that. But yes, he is somebody who he's following a path that is quite unlike any other players. You think about Cristiano Ronaldo, you think about Lionel Messi, which is the kind of category that he aspires to become part of, which is not quite there yet. He hasn't won the Ballon d'Or. He hasn't got the same honors list that these guys have. But he aspires to be there, and they're convinced he can be there. But it is a unique trajectory, which is, again, the trajectory of a football player and of also an asset to be branded and to be marketed to make as much money as possible within the short span of a footballer's career. And this explains an awful lot of the attitude we have towards him, the ambivalence, the talent, and at the same time the histrionics, but also the brand and the hype around him.
Yeah, you've explained that very well. I suppose he has to live with the day-to-day reality, the consequences of those decisions. For instance, it was quite telling that Leonardo, who's the director of football, obviously, at PSG, in recent days, L'Equipe reported that at a training session, L'Equipe made the point to the team, from now on, French will be spoken. If someone doesn't understand it, they can take classes. Now, I have no doubt that Neymar isn't the only player there who doesn't speak French very well, but L'Equipe went on to say that he's never really been taught French or been all that interested in learning French.
The big problem was the fact that the previous regime, that's the pre-Leonardo regime, was an uneasy mixture of managers who were trying to do their job as best they could and a board or people who were supposedly in charge not having a clue of what to do and giving far too much leeway to the playing staff. This is what actually accounted for Unai Emery, for example, who was very open about that, explaining that 50% of his staff, playing staff that is, was buying into his project, and the rest of them just couldn't be bothered because they could do what the hell they wanted. And there was also the big problem of the Brazilian nucleus within PSG, which was a team within the team and developed to such an extent that it had become really quite toxic. In the dressing room, certainly in terms of the dynamics and the fact that it was very difficult for whichever manager was in place to build a project. It's different with Thomas Tuchel, who is definitely someone who has been brought in with an idea of putting in place a system of play. Especially with the recruitment of Leonardo, that changes everything. Leonardo is somebody that PSG fans were crying out for, for him to return, with somebody who is a disciplinarian and won't take any nonsense, and also he's Brazilian, so he can put his point across in any way that you want. In very good French, by the way. So there is a new order in place. It's also very interesting that PSG's best performances in some ways have come in games where neither Neymar nor Mbappe nor Cavani were playing, which is also something which has got people talking. They've had some really, really good games. So it's a new order which is put in place in Paris, more disciplined, less player power, more hands-on management, perhaps a greater say of the manager in the team he's putting on the pitch. Like, for example, he wants to play with three midfielders. Well, the three midfielders would be Ander Herrera, Marco Verratti, and of course, Idriss Agueye, who is having a superb season with PSG since his arrival from Everton, which means that there's going to be great competition for the places in the top, in the three attacking places. And, you've got Angel Di Maria is there, who is an absolute cert in the starting lineup, which leaves us with Neymar, Cavani, and Mbappe, and Choupo-Moting, but maybe I shouldn't have mentioned the last name.
And Di Maria scored two against Madrid in a game where, as you've referenced, Mbappe, Cavani, Neymar don't figure. So very interesting times. I don't suppose anybody is going to close the 16-point gap in Ligue 1 on last year.
League is over. It's over. We can all go home now.
Yeah, congratulations,
it's,
PSG.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible because the teams we were expecting or hoping to put the challenge, and I'm thinking of Olympique Lyonnais in particular with the new order, Brazilians again, Juninho Pernambucano coming back as sports director, Silvinho coming as a manager. Though they were very inexperienced in many ways in that kind of role, people were hoping that the words, the fine words they were saying would be translated into reality. And the first two games, they scored 10 goals. And since then, it's been pretty, pretty dire. And if you watch the game they played against Paris last weekend, they lost only 1-0 to this fabulous goal by Neymar. But for goodness sake, they didn't try anything. They didn't believe in it 1 second. Mm. So, yes, the league is over. I'm terribly sorry to report that. Nobody will catch them. And we've played what? 6 games.
Wow. So I guess, look, to conclude then, this sounds like a very interesting dynamic with Neymar, with Tuchel and increased power, and I suppose with their ambitions in Europe. So there's quite a few storylines here to sit back and watch develop over the next couple of months.
By the way, in Europe, for once this year, I think they could do something with this new order in place.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking to you across the season. Philippe, as ever, brilliant to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Now then, you're welcome back. So before we go, been a busy couple of weeks in the life of Jack Byrne. He's been back and obviously doing very well at Shamrock Rovers. And then we all saw his debut from the bench against Bulgaria. He was absolutely brilliant. Earlier on today, he was helping to mark the launch of FIFA 20 and the return of the FIFA 20 SSC or Tricity League Premier Division Club Packs. I'm not entirely sure what they are, but I'm sure if you're a fan of FIFA 20, that is a big deal. They're going to be going live, I'm told, when the game goes on sale this Friday. I have lost all track of FIFA 20, I'm sorry to say. But Jack Byrne was launching it today, goes on sale this Friday. And Stephen Doyle caught up with Jack Byrne. Here's what they got on.
I just want to ask you first, have you watched back the tape of your senior debut for the Republic of Ireland yet?
Obviously, unbelievable night for me. So went home, I think, the next day, watched it, and just, still being critical, saying, oh, I could have done this, could have done that. But look, It was an unbelievable proud moment for myself and my family, and you know, something that I'll take to the grave with me, you know, because it was an unbelievable feel.
I don't know if you've listened much to the great John Giles over the years, and I know listening to him myself as a pundit, he's a great expert, and obviously one of the great midfielders Ireland ever had, Leeds United as well. But there's one thing he always kind of says in his analysis of players is, you want to see midfielders going on the pitch and demanding the ball. And it's something I think that was noted by many people when you went on. He was like, you were demanding the ball, you were looking for it, which I suppose takes a lot of confidence when you're not used to playing with the players that you were on that night.
Yeah, you know, I trained with the players. So, look, I was thinking that they trust me enough to give me the ball. And, you know, I thought, like, I was coming onto the pitch 60 minutes, I had a half an hour. And I thought, look, I might not get this again. So, you know, go out and be me. And if that's good enough, then great. If not, then, you know, fair enough. I know I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but, look, I wanted to go out on the pitch and just be myself. And, you know, obviously, I'm a technical player, so, you know, I'm not going to be going around smashing people and, you know, heading balls and stuff like that. So, it is my game to try and get on the ball. So I was just, you know, asking people for the ball, and I felt as if we could get in good areas to affect the game.
I thought it was very impressive as well, the fact that, you know, Mick McCarthy had given you that advice, and when you came out and spoke about it afterwards, you were like, look, he was dead right, you know, there was things I need to fix and that kind of thing. I suppose just as a great maturity, you know, do you feel that you've really matured, not as a player, but just as a human in the last couple of years, where you take that kind of criticism on board and you use it to make yourself better?
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't only, obviously, Mick McCarthy saying it. It was, you know, Stephen Bradley has been brilliant with me. He was helping me all season, you know, especially in Europe, playing high up the pitch and trying to get on the ball against, you know, teams that are more expansive and are trying to play. And it's difficult sometimes when you go and play in Tallaght and teams are sitting back and, you know, banks are four and it's difficult to get on the ball. There's not much space there, so you might have to drop a little bit deeper. But when obviously Mick was saying that he wanted to see me higher up, I never saw it as a criticism. I always saw it as somebody that was just trying to help me game. And, you know, look, I'm by no means the finished article. I only played 30 minutes, you know, and I don't want it to be me only 30 minutes. So any advice that he can give me, and, you know, Robbie can give me and Terry Connors and stuff like this is invaluable to me. So, you know, I'm obviously gonna listen to it and try and help me bring myself to the next level, because I understand that a lot of them players that are playing with Ireland are playing at a much higher level than me. So, you know, if he's saying stuff to me to try and help me, then look, it's only for my own benefit.
That's Robbie Keane you mentioned there as well. Just out of interest, him being a talent native himself, what kind of advice did he give you when he was with you in the squad?
Well, he play in the number 10 as well. So, you know, just giving me advice is when not to run, when to just hold your position, stand still, don't try not to run myself out of the game, because sometimes you can be too eager to get on the ball. So look, there's no better person to learn from than Robbie, especially for someone like myself who plays in that kind of number 10 position. So, you know, the advice that he's given me, and even when I was on the pitch, and you know, he'd be saying certain stuff to me. You know, just even when I was in the game, you know, he doesn't have to do that. So for him to take the time out to try and help me and to try and improve my game is look, something I'm really grateful for.
I know, speaking to some former Irish internationals, that Mick McCarthy might sometimes just give you a phone call maybe a week or two after a match. Have you heard from him since? Or
yeah, he texts me saying congrats, you know, on the debut, and thanks for the week. And you know, he didn't have to do that. So I just think, you know, shows the kind of manager he is, that, you know, he would take the time out to take somebody. You know, I think he obviously knew how much it meant to me, and you know, it's obviously, you know, a really nice touch that, you know, he did message me and say, you know, congratulations.
And that must give you the real determination into, you know, try and impress over the next few weeks and make that squad for the qualifiers coming up.
Yeah, I'm not really thinking, man. I'm just trying to, you know, just coming back down to earth after what happened. You know, it was a mad couple of weeks. But look, it's such a big couple of weeks for the club, for the fans. you know, from my own family as well, you know, coming to watch games all season. Now they get to come and watch a semi-final in Daly Mount with a chance of us to get to you know, obviously a cup final here in the Aviva. So look, it's such a big week for the club, and I think we've approached it properly. We've played you know, strong sides in all the games, which you should, because you should respect the league, and you know, we're not just looking at the cup, but obviously you want to get to a cup final. You want to be here, you know, come November. So look, we're working hard, we're trying hard. So hopefully we can just get a bit of luck now on Friday.
There you are, Jack Byrne in conversation with Stephen Doyle at the launch of FIFA 20. That is pretty much us done for today. We're pretty much out of time. OTBAM, our sports breakfast show, back tomorrow 7:30 on our social channels and OTB Radio at offtheball.com. In a moment, Richie's going to run you through all the full times from the League Cup. We'll be back tomorrow night from 7 with John Giles. And Tom Dunn is on the way next. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.